Case against Trill. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Lieutenant Brian Korn, and I represent the appellant, Daniel Trill. Chief Judge Efron, with your permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Granted.
Appellant was charged with committing indecent acts upon his 15-year-old stepdaughter on diverse occasions. The government put on evidence that appellant unlawfully touched his stepdaughter twice, on 25 and 26 September. The military judge convicted appellant of the lesser-included offense of assault consummated by a battery upon a child under the age of 16. Moments later, in response to a question by the trial counsel, the military judge clarified that the conviction was on the one occasion, as opposed to on diverse occasions. Because the military judge failed to specify which alleged incident formed the basis of the conviction, the lower court was unable to conduct a proper Article 66 review.
Counsel, if you apply the elements test, is the Article 128 offense an LIO of the Article 134?
To be honest, Your Honor, off the top of my head, I'm not entirely sure. Certainly that's something that hasn't been raised either at the lower court or before this court. Unfortunately, I can't cite the specific elements.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Thank you.
But
can you catalog, please, what you think is in the record and what was presented either as argument and or as evidence, cataloging the two incidents rather than one rather than ten? Etc.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Initially, obviously,
just like tick, 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 tick.
Initially, the incident which occurred on 26 September was first discussed in a pretrial motion. But in terms of evidence, there were only three witnesses at this trial altogether, Your Honor. There was the NCIS agent, there was the victim, and there was the victim's mother. The NCIS agent was used to put on appellant's statement, in which the 26th September incident was discussed. The next witness was the victim.
Remember to cite two specific pages and so on. This is your laundry list.
Specific pages of the joint
Each time the September 25th incident is referenced, please indicate. Do you follow?
Yes, sir.
If your argument's based on the fact that there are two incidents presented to the finder of fact, what in the evidence and in the argument documents that?
Yes, Your Honor. So initially it was appellant's statement, which is referenced on page 2 of the joint appendix in the lower court's decision.
Now, are you talking there about the 26th September or the 25th September incident?
In appellant's statement, he mentions the 26th September incident, Your Honor. Next is the testimony of the victim in the case on page 8 of the joint appendix. She begins to testify. She says on page 217, and this is referring to the 26th September incident, which is page 9 of the joint appendix, that she awoke to appellant touching her. She then says on page, I believe it is 11 of the joint appendix, that she recalls that it happened the morning before, meaning the 25th of September. And unfortunately, Your Honor, I can't cite to the specific page. It's not actually in the joint appendix when the victim's mother testifies, but she testifies that Petty Officer True told her, admitted to having committed this assault on both the 26th and the 25th of September. And that is the entirety of the evidence in the record demonstrating either of these two incidents.
With respect to the existence of two incidents, if none of the language had occurred about the lesser included offense or changing the diverse language, would the government be able to argue in this case that there was legally sufficient evidence to convict the appellant of diverse activity?
I believe so, Your Honor. There was testimony by the victim as to both occasions. Initially she testified regarding 26 September. She said that she actually turned over, saw appellant touching her on 26 September, and told him to stop, and he apologized. She said that that then made her remember that the same thing had happened the morning before. And she testified in response to trial counsel's question that she was certain it had been appellant the morning before.
Counsel, how are we supposed to deal with the judge's findings in this case? And the judge, I think everybody agrees, in making her findings, found him guilty of the lesser included offense, but at that point didn't do anything as to the diverse occasions or a single occasion. Then in response to this question from the trial counsel, said it was for the one occasion. When we look at the court-martial order, it only mentions the LIO. It doesn't mention that at all. Normally, when we get these cases, we rely on what's in the record. And normally, in these cases, the record specifically states, the court-martial order specifically states the action of the military judge. Here we don't have that. And, of course, the government argues that this was just kind of a comment that was thrown out there. And it seems to me that this case, to a large degree, turns on the effect of that. And so what's your best argument that that is, in fact, a formal part of the record that we need to be looking at?
Well, initially, Your Honor, the court-martial order cannot overturn the judge's verdict. And it's appellant's position here that the judge's verdict was the conviction on 26 September that there was a conviction on a single occasion and an acquittal on the diverse occasion. So that, as the judge said, the conviction was on the one occasion. The government does argue that the statement, it was on the one occasion, it was a meaningless six-word postscript. And the government relies on Rules of Court Martial 918. But 918 says that what the potential findings of a court-martial are, it doesn't give a verbatim example of how those findings must be read. So my answer to you, Your Honor, is that while the military judge did not render her verdict in the most traditional of senses, it was a verdict nonetheless, and her statement on the one occasion has the effect of finding appellant guilty of a single occasion, but not guilty of the diverse occasions.
Had not the trial counsel asked that question, and had not there been the clarification, would there have been a problem in this case?
There would not, Your Honor. And while appellant can't speak as to why trial counsel chose to ask that question, certainly the rules for court-martial, specifically RCM 922 and RCM 924, permit the military judge at any point during the trial to make that clarification of erroneous announcement or reconsideration of her original finding. Now, furthermore, Your Honor,
just to be clear, you until that statement, then you would agree with the government that the announced finding was for diverse occasions?
That appellant's position is that wouldn't have probably been the military judge's intention, but that would have been the effect of that ruling. Yes, Your Honor.
I interrupted you, but I just wanted to clarify that so I understood what you were saying.
Yes, Your Honor. Furthermore, the fact that the military judge acquitted appellant of a single occasion and convicted appellant of a single occasion is the law of the case here. The lower court certainly found that, and I'll quote, the military judgment's announcement of the findings, while irregular, clearly referred to the single incident. That was not appealed by the government and remains the law of the case before this court today. And finally, Your Honor, looking at the practical application, if this court were to find that the military judge's ruling that it was on the one occasion amounted to, as the government would say, a meaningless six-word postscript, would produce absurd results. It would be placing form so far above substance as to render substance somewhat meaningless. By way of an example, Your Honor, were a military judge to say, I find the accused of all specifications, of all charges and the specifications thereunder guilty, and then moments later were to say, hold on, did I just say guilty? I meant to say not guilty. I almost just convicted an innocent man. By the government's argument, that would be a meaningless postscript and would have no effect as it wasn't rendered according to the specific language of RCM 918.
Counsel, at trial, as was discussed, the military judge and the trial counsel had the colloquy and resulting in the language about one occasion. In the report of the results of trial submitted by the trial counsel, which is in the record, There's a reference to finding guilty of lesser included offense, guilty by exceptions and substitutions, but trial counsel did not explain what the exceptions and substitutions were. The staff judge advocate's review states the full charge specification mentions the LIO but doesn't mention the diverse occasions language. The defense response says that appellant was found guilty of the LIO on one occasion but did not seek correction of the SJR or raise a question as to the occasion on which he was found guilty. And the SJR addendum makes no mention of the one occasion language. So who's responsible for sorting out those differing approaches to what happened at trial? Is it the convening authority? Is it the staff judge advocate? Is it the defense counsel? Is it the Court of Criminal Appeals upon review? Who bore the responsibility for straightening this out?
Initially, Your Honor, it would go to the convening authority and the convening authority's action. However, it certainly falls on the Court of Criminal Appeals to ensure that the convening authority's action and the record of trial are correct. The Court of Criminal Appeals determined that the military judge had, in fact, struck the diverse occasions or had intended to strike the diverse occasions language in finding appellant guilty on the one occasion. And that was the finding of the Court of Criminal Appeals. And so that is the posture of the case today. This case is directly controlled by this court's decisions in Walters, Cedars, and Wilson, which all say that when an accused is charged on diverse occasions, but a military judge or members find the accused guilty on only a single occasion, but fail to specify which occasion formed the basis of a conviction, then the Court of Criminal Appeals cannot conduct a proper Article 66 review. Now, the lower court, in this case, found the military judge convicted appellant of the 26th September incident. They determined that based on what they considered to be a shorthand developed by all of the parties at trial. However, the lower court's reliance on this shorthand was misplaced, as the parties never referred to the September 26th incident as the one occasion, as the military judge said in her findings. The parties, the trial counsel, defense counsel, and military judge, referenced the September 26th incident approximately 8 times, 7 of those during that pretrial motion session. They referenced it as the September incident, the late September incident, the 26th September incident, and the civilian defense counsel, Mr. Cave, twice referenced it as the 24th September incident. Never once did any of these parties use the term one occasion, nor did they even ever use the word occasion. Now, a Court of Criminal Appeals can review the record to determine if there is only a single possible incident that meets all the details of the specification for which the appellant was convicted. Here, because the language of the specification covered both the 25 September and 26 September incident, the Court of Criminal Appeals could not, as a matter of law, determine which of the two alleged incidents served as the grounds for the conviction without explicit guidance from the military judge.
You're certainly making a factual argument. Are you also making a legal argument in the abstract that so long as there's evidence introduced on more than one incident, a Court of Criminal Appeals could never reach the judgment that the one incident rather than the other was the one for which there was a guilty finding?
That's correct, Your Honor, unless the military judge or the members make it clear in the finding which incident they're referring to.
And so it doesn't matter, trying to create a ridiculous hypothetical, if there's 100 references to one incident and only a passing allusion to another, is it your view that, as a matter of law, that can never pass Walter's muster?
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. And although it might not have been as extreme an example, that was what this court determined in Cedar, when there was overwhelming evidence of a single incident and far more underwhelming evidence of the other incident. And this court determined that that was not appropriate for the Court of Criminal Appeals to consider in determining the case. So because the military judge did not clarify her findings or put facts and evidence to specify which events formed the basis of the conviction, the findings remain ambiguous. because the military judge failed to specify which of the two alleged assaults formed the basis of appellant's conviction, the lower court could not perform a proper Article 66 review, and this court should set aside appellant's conviction and dismiss the charges with prejudice.
Thank you, counsel. You have an opportunity for further argument and rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Efron, and may it please the court. In Walters and most recently in Rodriguez, this court recognized that the holding from Walters is in fact narrow, and it's limited to that class of cases where a diverse occasions specification has been converted to a single offense specifications through exceptions and substitutions. That's not what happened here, and it wasn't until the case reached the lower court, in fact, that the diverse occasions language was accepted from the charge. And I think, turning to the point that you had recognized, Judge Erdman, this case does, the fulcrum point here is what operative effect does the judge's six-word statement that was given after the fact, what does that have? And our position is simply that it cannot, a statement like that, a statement of deliberative intent, cannot be used to modify properly announced findings. The judge in this case, when she rendered her findings, they included all of the charging language that had been originally included. The only modification had to do with the lesser included offense.
As a matter of law, go ahead.
She found him guilty of the LIO on diverse occasions?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Okay, and then she turned around and said no.
She, several moments later, in response to a question.
But the government's position is that in announcing findings, she found him guilty of the LIO, the Article 128 LIO, on diverse occasions.
That's okay. Correct, Your Honor. By failing to accept out that language, it carried through.
It has to be done by exceptions and substitutions to trigger Walters.
I think that's right, Your Honor. Because the court has recognized that Walters is a narrow rule that applies in those distinct circumstances. So too, the judge failed to accept out the charging language that alleged that the appellant had touched the victim's breasts and genitalia. And in fact, it wasn't until the lower court accepted out that language as well that the language was removed. The judge failed to do that despite the trial counsel's concession that no evidence had been put on at the trial with respect to that charging language. So insofar as the diverse occasions as well as the language that alleged genitalia and indecent acts on the breasts, that travels down to the lesser included offense.
Okay, I want to ask you the same question I asked the appellant, and that is, is the Article 128 offense an LIO of the 134 if you apply the elements test?
I don't know on the straight pleadings elements test. I've got my 2008 manual. I'm sorry I can't answer
that's
that
okay. That's
straight away, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Counsel, what offense does the appellant stand convicted of at the present time?
Right now, Your Honor, he stands guilty of assault consummated by a battery on a child under age 18 on one occasion.
Okay. And the government has not appealed that, has the government?
That's correct.
So we have at trial evidence, at least identified by defense counsel in argument, of two separate incidents. And we have a conviction on appeal of one incident.
That's correct.
And could you address that in terms of Walters and Sider? In terms of what we thought the judge meant and what he might have done or whether he could or could not have made this change or whether the convening authority of the SJA handled improperly, but in terms of what's before the court right now, and that is a conviction of a single occasion in a case in which there was evidence of two occasions before the fact finder.
Well, I think Rodriguez is dispositive, Your Honor, in the case's current posture. Walters and Sider do not control. If what we had was a finding at trial, essentially of a conviction on diverse occasions, on appeal, that was dropped down to a single occasion spec. And just as the court did in Rodriguez, I think that's the governing case in under this case's current posture. Our position simply is that much like the arraignment or the entry of pleas, the announcement findings has to comply with strict procedural requirements in order to have legal effect. Certain critical stages in trial, they require that significant incantations be uttered, and when they're uttered aloud, they have legal consequences. The proper announcement of findings is one of those. I think I would just like to point out in this court's recent opinion in Wilson on page 428, there's just one line of dicta that I would like to discuss. And it does indicate that in a military judge alone trial.
Can I ask you one time? The CCA has made a point of saying that one can look to the context in the record as a whole to determine what the verdict was. I gather you don't agree with that. You don't buy that.
We are asking that the court affirm the judgment of the court, but I'm not advancing the contextual argument that they made, Your Honor. I think
not that you're not advancing it. You have to reject it if you operate on the theory that all that matters is what the judge said the finding was.
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
You can't pick. You can pick, but it's not logically consistent to pick both.
Well, that's right. I'm not embracing the logic employed by the lower court in the case. We are asking, however, the court affirm the judgment based upon the argument we've advanced here, and we did advance that at the lower court in oral argument and on brief.
What's your answer to the appellant's example of, and I can't remember what it was, but it was the announcement is either not guilty and then the judge says guilty, oops, I blew it, guilty, or not guilty, guilty, or guilty, not guilty?
I think two answers.
Tough luck, right? Depending on which way it cuts.
It would depend on which way it cut, Your Honor. Right. That's a street that only goes one way, I think. If the judge had said guilty, oops, sorry, I was incorrect in that, and then found not guilty after the fact, that would be permissible. If the judge, on the other hand, entered a finding of not guilty, I don't know that she could go back after the fact and amend that. I think, as Walters noted in footnote number 5, that once there's been an entry of not guilty, that becomes final.
Well, where do we draw the line? If the military judge can say guilty, oh, no, I meant not guilty, which is okay in your view, and if the judge said guilty, and then the trial counsel or the defense counsel immediately said, well, Your Honor, you know, is that correct? And the judge says, oh, no, wait a minute, I made a mistake. Would that be permissible? How far, where do we draw the line?
I think the way to cabin in the RCM 918 announcement of findings would, the most reasonable way would be at the point at which the judge says, accusing counsel, please rise, he or she enters the verdict, or the president delivers the verdict, and then says, you may be seated. That's the most, I suppose, judicially manageable way of finding
the, you may be seated is now a technical term that we look at.
I think only insofar as that is the termination point for the entry of findings, and some kind of modifying statements after the fact. They could surely give indicia of doubt or reconsideration, but that would then have to be followed on by a new entry of findings that was correct. I just did want to touch on the line of dicta in Wilson that said that in a judge alone trial, if there are ambiguous findings, the judge can clarify that after the fact. I think that holds certainly in cases like Perkins or in the Army Court's decision in Dilday, where you have evidence in the record that does support it allows the reviewing bodies to both base their judgment intelligently thereon, as well as provides a bar to subsequent prosecution. That's the two-part Perkins test that the courts have repeatedly relied upon. But if there were, in fact, a true Walters verdict, an ambiguity that was fatal, in fact, I don't believe that a clarifying statement after the fact would actually be permissible in providing reviewing bodies the ability to clear it up after the fact. Once an ambiguous finding has been entered, it's not for the judge several moments or several months after the fact to then clarify that, where we do have a true Walters verdict. That's not what we have here, simply being because the military judge did not accept out the diverse occasions.
Just to be clear, you're not suggesting that that the military judge couldn't have found the appellant guilty of all occasions and then reconsidered and said no on a single occasion. You're quibbling with the manner in which that was done.
That's correct, Your Honor.
It's a pure formalistic argument.
It is, Your Honor. She certainly could have done that after the fact. Our position is simply that she didn't do it procedurally correctly in this case, and that her statement of deliberative intent, if it can't impeach the verdict. It certainly indicates what she may have subjectively been thinking. But this
was not an extra record remark, was it?
No,
the remark was made on the record. Was it made before or after sentencing?
It was made before sentencing.
So here we have, before we've gotten to sentencing, we're still in that stage of the trial that's dealing with findings. Why should the responsibility of clarifying the record be placed on anyone other than the military judge? And that is, there are two things that come out of a court-martial, the findings and the sentence. That's what the court-martial is set up to decide. And if we get to the point in the trial where the judge is not clear on what the findings should be, why shouldn't it be incumbent upon the military judge to clarify that, especially in a case like this where the trial counsel has some questions about it?
The onus should be upon the military judge, Your Honor. But with respect to the findings that were entered, they were clear, they were unambiguous, and they were in the form directed by RCM 918. To the degree that any, as I use the term, a reflection of her deliberative intent was now on the record or evident to the parties, then one or both or all parties involved in the court-martial should have sought a new announcement of findings. But because we're left without that, we have the charge as it was in fact charged, approved by the convening authority, and then docketed with the lower court.
So why is the lower court incorrect then when it is determined that based upon the failure of the judge to correct matters at trial, the lower court has exercised its responsibility to determine what happened?
Well, it was correct in that regard, Your Honor. The threshold question is whether or not the case is even capable of review under Article 66. And because the diverse occasions element wasn't accepted out, that the case was capable of review. And our position is because the lower court did properly perform its Article 66 function. And I don't know that in finding the term "it is on the one occasion" to be shorthand for the incident that was discussed for the majority of time during the trial, I think the court may have abused its discretion in that regard. But
this is not a case in which the lower court has said, we find that the appellant is guilty of only one occasion offense. It's not a case where the Court of Criminal Appeals has said, we find that the government hasn't proved diverse occasions beyond a reasonable doubt. Instead, the lower court has said, we find that the record establishes that the military judge found the appellant guilty of only one occasion. And in that light, why don't we give deference to the lower court's reading of the record of the trial in this case, given their responsibilities in that regard?
I think deference is due when the court is making what amounts to a contextual, whether or not the finding actually entered refers through some notation or shorthand to the actual incident of which the judge had intended to convict of. In this case, I don't know that, well, deference is certainly warranted to the lower court's review in the broad spectrum of cases. In this case, I don't know that the lower court correctly did that because the term "on one occasion" is truly ambiguous. But the question is whether or not they were even capable of reviewing this case under Article 66, and I think there's no question that they were. Appellant is simply wrong in arguing that the judge announced a finding on one occasion. That's why, because the case was properly docketed with the lower court, the lower court's
so they were capable of reviewing it, but not for the reason that they stated.
I think they were improper in performing. The court, it reached the right judgment. I don't know that it was correct in finding that the term on the one occasion adequately provided, I guess, the proper assurances that this is what the judge was intending to convict of. I think that statement taken alone, it would be ambiguous. But that's not critical to the, I guess, holding that this court will come out with. The question is whether or not it was even capable of review. And certainly it was. I will just note that our second...
Was the case capable of review under the terms in which the Court of Criminal Appeals reviewed it? Or is it only capable of review under the terms which the government urges us to apply in reviewing the record?
Oh, no, it was capable of review under the terms at which the lower court reviewed it, Your Honor.
That is, under the terms in which they found that the military judge determined that the findings were of only one occasion.
That's right. I would just note that our fallback argument, to the degree that if this court finds there's any ambiguity, the fallback argument, it doesn't need to be passed upon. I don't think the court needs to address the double jeopardy problems raised, and constitutional avoidance would say that I think if our first argument prevails, then the 1102 argument need not be reached in this case. If there are no further questions, we'll submit the case.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Does the defense have rebuttal?
Initially, Your Honor, I'd just like to clarify the sequence of events in case there's any confusion on the court's part. The military judge made her finding of the lesser included offense moments later, before court even adjourned, and well before the sentencing case began, is when trial counsel asked if it is on diverse occasions or on one occasion. It is at that point, only moments after making her finding, that the military judge said it is on the one occasion. And now briefly to respond to the government's argument of putting form ahead of substance here, the government argues that RCM 918 directs what form findings must take. Now while RCM 918 does dictate the potential findings of a court-martial, it doesn't say that this is the verbatim way in which findings must be delivered. And I doubt very much that the government would be here in other cases arguing that a conviction cannot stand because the military judge failed to use the words exactly as specified in 918 in convicting an appellant. And then finally, looking at the rules for courts-martial 922 and 924, RCM 922 says that erroneous announcements can be corrected by a new announcement by the military judge, and RCM 924 says that a military judge can reconsider a finding of guilty at any time before announcement of the sentence, and that's exactly what the military judge properly did here.
Could you address the government's suggestion that this case is governed by Rodriguez?
Absolutely, Your Honor. In Rodriguez, the conviction at the lower court was on all the diverse occasions. At the appellate court found that some of the diverse occasions were not sufficient for convictions. It is not governed by Rodriguez. It is instead governed by Walters, Sider, and Wilson, as it was the trial court, the military judge in this case, that found that there was a conviction on only one occasion as opposed to diverse occasions.
Would you think that, and I'm not asking you to, I guess my question is, if the military judge, instead of saying it's on the one occasion, had said on the September 2006 occasion, would your view of the CCA's decision be different?
Had said September 26th or simply
September 2006, I'm sorry.
It would not, Your Honor, as, again, both incidents occurred in September of 2006, so both could be encompassed within that finding. And that was this court's ruling in Schurer. If there are no further questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. The case is now submitted. We appreciate the presentation of both parties, and the court will be in recess until 10:10 this morning.
Applause.